Hello, this is William Fink, and this is Christigenia Internet Radio. This program is being pre-recorded on Friday afternoon for Friday, June 17th, 2022. Praise Yahweh, the God of Israel, and thank you for listening. This evening, we have our good friend Dr. Michael Hill here of the League of the South, president of the League of the South, and we hope to discuss an article that I've been writing titled The Widening Gulf and the Tolerance of Evil. And I've said this before last year in a podcast on white nationalist cognitive dissonance, and I will paraphrase it here. The idea that a nation can be both great and immoral is primarily a Jewish conception which has been pushed upon us in the name of liberalism. But such a nation cannot endure. There cannot be a great society which fosters immorality. It will no longer be great, but rather it shall destroy itself in sin. Rome and Sodom, as well as Weimar Germany, all stand as signal historical examples of this very phenomenon. Immorality is satanic, and it has destroyed every nation which has ever experimented with attempts to give it any legitimacy. When the Jews want to destroy a nation, they begin by promoting immorality, and that is precisely what they have done in America. They are the historic purveyors of usury, gambling, prostitution, sodomy, miscegenation, pornography, and other sorts of vain entertainment, and every other sin on account of which we, as a people, have now fallen. We may not all be cognizant of that fall, but we've indeed fallen. Hello, Dr. Hill. Thank you for joining us here tonight.
Bill, thanks for having me on again. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. This theme of speaking of our enemies has, of course, it's constantly raised within League of the South circles. It's a constant topic at our conferences. I don't see these enemies as the source of our troubles. I see them as the result of our troubles, and that is our acceptance, our tolerance of sin. Even if we don't think we're tolerating sin, very often out in society on a daily basis we are, and we shouldn't be tolerating sin. We have to stand against evil, in opposition to evil, if we're ever going to have the favor of God.
Yeah, the enemy is who he is. Leper's not going to change his spots. The fault lies with us for the toleration of this evil. My father told me a long time ago, Bill, he said, you want to find the source of your trouble. 99% of the time, don't go looking around outside. Just go step in front of the mirror, and you'll find the source of your trouble. You're not doing what you ought to be doing. And we're not doing what we should be doing. I mean, Jews are Jews. You know, they're the children of the devil, and they are who they are, and we know that. And to rant and rave, you know, about that to the exclusion of examining our own actions and our own hearts is counterproductive. We know who the enemy is, and we know what they are, and we know how they operate. And we've beaten that until it's a dead horse, I think. Obviously, a lot of people still need to understand this, but you get my point, is that we tend to do this to the exclusion of what you suggested, and that is to look at our own shortcomings and failures. And the biggest one is that we simply tolerate evil amongst ourselves and among our societies here, and it is, you know, it's brought us low, and that's what Yahweh does to people who his people when they tolerate evil. You know, we're told that strangers will rule over you. They'll be above you. You'll be put down below them. And that's what's happening right now. We act like we're surprised about it. But the solution is, as you pointed out, is for us to face up to our own shortcomings and be the kind of men and women who will not tolerate evil any longer.
Absolutely. And one of the concepts I was going to ask you about something else or discuss something else, but I decided just now upon your opinions, which you have just expressed, to go on a slightly different track. But what your father had said seems to me to be practical old Southern country Christian wisdom. It's just something that people instinctively knew at one time, but because we no longer have biblical education in our schools, and because people who go to Bible schools are basically getting an ADL approved biblical education rather than true biblical
Right.
education, that we're out of touch with that very concept.
Yes, we are. It was a very simple thing, and he always tried to teach me to take responsibility for my own actions or lack thereof, and he wouldn't take any excuses, and I thank God for having had a father like that. It was tough on me. And, I haven't always lived up to his words, but I've always had them in the back of my mind. And when I don't, I'm always ashamed that I haven't. We all want to blame others for our problems. That's just a natural human inclination, I believe. But, this is not just a personal thing, as we have discussed before. This is about the survival of our civilization. And when something that important is in the balance, we damn well better put our own pride aside and deal with the problem that's staring us in the face, and that is, once again, the fact that we tolerate evil, and God has told us in His Word, Yahweh has pointed it out very clearly to us that you do not tolerate evil. You don't play games with it. You don't try to negotiate with it. You don't try to cut a deal with it. You destroy it. And that's what we've forgotten.
Absolutely. And perhaps until only recently, those values that your father expressed, the values of most Southerners had not changed until recently.
No,
It's
that's
only in
right.
this last couple of decades that the South has gotten, let me say this, has approached the decadence of the other regions of the country. Let me put it that way. Because we're not there yet, but many of our people are here in the South.
Yeah,
In
that's
your article.
right. As a society, we are not quite there yet, but we're headed in that direction. But a lot of individuals have already succumbed to
Right.
that.
In your article, The Great Divide, you contrasted American to Southern. And you also expressed many of our sentiments here from a different perspective. One important point that you made that I wouldn't make today, that in this discussion, but I am because you made it, is that so-called American values are not definable. They're not defined. So America really has no values of its own.
America has no values like that. America has long, if it ever was a Christian country, has long since given up those foundational moorings. But there's residual Christianity in the South, and I think if anything, that is going to be what Yahweh uses to regenerate and save us in a temporal sense, our society and civilization. But yes, there are identifiable Southern values, and one of and largely they all stem from a fundamental understanding of what I call old time traditional Christianity. And one thing, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but let me say this: at one time in the South, and that was as recent as 100 years ago, even Methodists and Baptists believed in a lot of the tenets that today we would associate solely with the Christian identity. There was a monument dedication here in the area where I live, a Confederate monument dedication back in the 1890s, 130 years ago, roughly. And the pastor who gave the prayer, it was actually more than a prayer. It was kind of a sort of a devotional for the whole ceremony there. But basically, he said that we are God's people. We, the descendants of Adam, have been transplanted here to this new land. You know, and you think you'd hear a Methodist minister say anything like that today? No, absolutely not. But we still have some of that residual hangover, carryover, I guess you might say, from what Christianity used to be in the South, you know, 100, 150, 200 years ago. And may God use that to save us.
Absolutely. And I believe he will, because there's always a remnant of his people, and we
right.
have an assurance of that. And
that's right.
I believe that most of them, the greater majority of them, right? Because I'm not discounting everybody from the other regions of the nation or the world, but the great majority of them are here in the South and parts of the Midwest.
I agree with you there. And that's, you know, it's nothing that we ourselves ought to be able to take credit for. It's Yahweh has put that here for,
right.
for his own choice, by his own choice and for his own purposes. But, you know, I thought because of that when the final battle comes, that this is likely to be where it's going to be fought.
Well, this would be the starting point, because this is what wherever the corpse is found, the vultures are gathered, the eagles are gathered. That's
right.
Just the way it is. So
right.
I would agree that American values, it wasn't the purpose of the founding documents of this federal government to express values. The only value
no.
I find in the United States Constitution has been ignored for 200 years, and that's the fact that it was formed, the Union was formed for us and our posterity. But beyond that,
exactly,
that's the value, the only value in the Constitution, and it's been ignored. And purposely.
Yeah, that's the basic fundamental value of the Constitution, is to set forth for whom this work was intended.
So that part's been kicked aside right from the beginning, at least from the time of the War of Northern Aggression.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say that the undermining of it started probably a generation before that.
Absolutely. But the original American values are found in the laws and constitutions and the founding documents of the various states,
yes,
which sometimes differed from one another in varying degrees. And that's the reasons for many of the differences between us and for why the South should be distinct from the Puritan colonies and Quaker colonies in the North.
Right.
A government can only reflect the values of its people. A government
That's
cannot
it.
Originate or legislate values. It can only reflect the values of its people. And now, today, there is such a disparity among the values of the people of this federal government that it cannot stand. It can't stand.
No, there's nothing there to hold it in place. It's in the process of falling right now. The fall initially is just a very slow lean, but it'll pick up speed, and when it does and crashes, it's going to hurt a lot of people.
Well, we have this warning in Daniel of the iron and the clay, and the iron cannot cleave to the clay.
That's right. Absolutely. There's so much in Yahweh's word that our people once knew, and it was reflected in the way that the society was run and the government was run. Because you're right, a government can't legislate the morality of a people. The people must inject their own morality into the government. And that's what we unfortunately have in D.C. today, in many of our own state houses. But this will not stand, because first and foremost, it is contrary to Yahweh's word, and anything contrary to his word is not going to stand for long. So we have that. And then it just, it's crazy. I mean, we have reached the limits, I hope, of the theater of absurdity. I mean, transgenderism, people cutting off their reproductive organs to try and become members of the opposite sex. I mean, this is ludicrous. I mean, this is insane asylum level lunacy, you know. This can't stand. And you almost wonder if we're not watching some kind of horror movie here.
Absolutely. It is a theater of absurdity. There is no doubt about that. And that's you've explained that very well. It's absolutely absurd. It's we become we're not Sodom and Gomorrah. We are now a caricature of Sodom and Gomorrah, a comedy based on the principles that were espoused in Sodom and Gomorrah, or I should say the vile practices which were made
right there.
We're like the comedic version of it.
That's right. And that makes it even worse. At least they were real and serious.
Well, right. But wow.
I mean, how do you even explain this? It's, you know, and so many people out there look around like, you know, is this really happening? Do the people who are supposed to be ruling us not know any better than this? Why is this being allowed to happen? I mean, I talk to a lot of people, and they scratch their heads, and they don't understand it. But they do know something is wrong.
Well, the last podcast that we did together, the Fall of the Empire, back in April, with that podcast, I had several videos, I think, or links to several videos of this Zelensky, this character, this Jew that they propped up in the Ukraine to be the president of the Ukraine. And he has been in drag and in sexual scenes with other men in some of his career as an actor, that there are many episodes of that. And he basically represents everything that this federal government here represents, because he's their product. That's all we're going to get from these people. Look at the trannies that Joe Biden has appointed to high offices in his administration. That's all we can expect from these people is corruption and perversion.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Corruption and perversion. That's it. And it won't get any better. It's just going to continue to get worse and worse and worse until the center can't hold anymore, and it's just going to fall apart. And Yahweh only knows what's going to be left to pick up out of the pieces of all this. But I just pray that folks like us are ready to do our part and try to create something healthy and usable with what pieces are left on the ground.
Well, the center can't hold, and it's not holding, and that, I would hope, will be one of the subjects of our further discussion here this evening. But one of the several position papers which attracted me to the League of the South originally is titled The League and Theocracy, because that actually got me to pay attention to your writing, sir, because there are things expressed in that most people just no longer have a concept of today. In that paper, it's explained, and I'm going to take snippets from maybe two or three sentences. It's explained that by a theocracy, we do not mean a government run by pastors and priests. Rather, a theocracy is a government ruled by the God of the Bible. It's a theocracy, right? It's not a bishopocracy. It's a theocracy. More precisely, it is a government whose code of law is firmly grounded in the law of God. And then, just as importantly, you stated, and this is something that people don't get, right, that all law is ultimately religious in nature. You can't separate law and religion. I
That's
wholeheartedly
right.
Believe that. Some ultimate standard of morality and ethics is the basis of all law. And that's absolutely true. But it's sad that most people are just oblivious to that truth. They're not taught that in schools. But people must ask.
No, they're not.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I'm 70 and a little bit older than probably most of your audience out there, but I do remember being taught that kind of stuff, at least superficially in schools. And I do remember getting that kind of information from my grandfathers. They both were well grounded in the Bible, and they taught me. They said, "Son, all laws are based in somebody's religion, whether it's going to be God's religion out of the Bible, or whether it's going to be somebody other's religion out of the Communist Manifesto or somewhere else. They're all based in somebody's religious beliefs." So I took that with me from an early age.
This is honestly something I learned at an early age, but I had to learn it on my own, because when I was young, I liked to read the papers of the founders. I don't remember if I learned this from Jefferson, Madison, Adams, but I learned it from one of them, this right. concept. It right. took time. I went to 10 years of Roman Catholic school, and I was not taught this. The people must ask themselves, if the laws of our nation or community are not based on the laws of our God, then whose laws are they? Because the laws of men are arbitrary, but the laws of God are eternal. That leads me to another problem, and another reason why we cannot, quote-unquote, save America, because today the Northwest and the West Coast states are populated with tens of millions of perverts. I'm sorry, the Northeast and the West Coast states, especially California, they're populated with tens of millions of perverts, and many of those are now leaching into the Christian states of the South and the Midwest. We cannot live with these perverts. We cannot tolerate their evil. We must not seek their peace.
No, I agree. I mean, they are coming into the South. They've been coming into places like Asheville, North Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, Austin, Texas, and college towns, obviously Charlottesville, places like Athens, Georgia. Anywhere where you have a liberal college town, you're going to have this influence. But a lot of conservative Christians today will say, well, we just have to reach some kind of agreement with these people. We just have to try to persuade them, not to do drag queen story hour at the public library, but maybe once a month, and then give us a warning so maybe we can keep our kids away from it. And if they want to have their gay pride parades in June, well, I guess we can let them do it. No, you can't do this. You've got to tell these people no. God condemns this behavior, and we're not going to put up with it. And you have to. And if the feds come down here and say, we're going to cram this down your throat, then you have to say, come ahead, we'll see. And I'm telling you that until we are willing to face down the powers, the evil powers, that are pushing this on us, Yahweh is not going to bless us. We look at this and we say, how can we do this? I mean, they got all the guns. They really don't. But they've got the authority. They've got the FBI. They've got the Department of Homeland Security. You name it, all the agencies they have and all the so-called authority they have to come down here and lock you up, Well, if we don't display some courage in the face of what seems to be overwhelming strength against us, Yahweh's not going to use his ultimate strength to fight this battle for us. So we got a choice to make. We can fight, and we may suffer the consequences here temporarily, or we can simply sit back and let all this happen, and we can suffer the consequences of a lost civilization and a lost future for our children and grandchildren. Now, I'm not willing to do that for my children and grandchildren. If I have to pay the price here, I'll pay it. But somebody has got to stand up to these people, and I do firmly believe, Bill, that if we show courage in the face of this evil, that Yahweh will bless us and give us the victory.
Absolutely. But if we tolerate evil or we accept evil, we'll never have a victory. And that's if we desire to please our God, if we wish to see his blessings upon our race, then we must separate ourselves from these wicked people and do our best. We're not going to be perfect, but do our best to live in a manner which is compliant with his laws.
Absolutely, sir, and that's never easy, but it is. It should be the goal of every one of us to fight this evil and eradicate it from our midst, and then to live as best we can, fully knowing that as fallen sinners, we're not going to be perfect, but to live as best we can under the code that he has set down for us in his holy word.
Absolutely. There was an event in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I never in my life expected to see anything like this in Idaho.
No.
That was a huge, I can only call it, it's a pride festival, right? It's a sodomy festival. And it was pretty significant, and it attracted a lot of Christian protesters, even though they were Judeo-Christian protesters. And sadly, that fact has been drowned out by the arrest of some of the Patriot Front members who showed up. And I don't really want to go off on a huge digression about this, but they showed up, and as far as I'm concerned, they made clowns out of themselves, and they all got arrested, and that took up most of the news coverage on what really happened at the Sodomite Festival, because it did have a significant number of more mainstream, or as you said, the center of Christian protesters, but it's good to see normal people protesting against sodomy, because they're not accepting.
I will give them credit for having done that. They may call themselves Judeo-Christians, but in this case, they did the right thing.
Right. This nothing better exemplifies this widening gulf between the righteous and the wicked in this country than the recent Supreme Court draft decision leak in the Dobbs versus Jackson case, which revealed a majority opinion that, if it is maintained, right, because we don't know if they're going to maintain this 5-4 majority.
No.
If it's maintained, it would overturn Roe versus Wade and more recent cases supporting so-called abortion rights. So it's my opinion that if that ruling becomes official, as it is written, it could also overturn federally mandated sodomite marriage and other immoral laws which have been forced upon unwilling states.
Yeah, and I think that's what the supporters of Roe versus Wade fear, is that this is just the first domino to fall, and I pray that to God that it is.
Well, right, because it's going to help widen that gulf. If it does indeed happen, there may be an exodus of leftists from half of the states in the empire.
Oh, that would be a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. All these perverts would have to leave the South because they're not together
in one place. Now, pray that God will turn it into a modern Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right, exactly. I agree. We were in South Carolina. I can't even remember the exact town that we were in. We were on our way home from Charlotte, and it was near Columbia, South Carolina, and we went to a brew pub because we like beer and we like local beer. And we also like to avoid Atlanta on our way home, so we cut south of it.
A good idea.
So we stopped in this brew pub in this small town. It wasn't too small. It was a small city, let me say, in South Carolina. I just can't remember which one it was, but it was south of Columbia. And we went to this brew pub, and it took about 20 minutes to realize that almost everybody in this brew pub was a sodomite. We didn't even really want to eat there. We lost our appetites. I mean, we ordered food, but wow, it was hard in that small country like Mayberry RFD southern city, because it was a nice place, it really was, that all the people were sodomites in this particular brew pub. So did we hit on the only gay and lesbian bar in the state of South Carolina? Probably not. There's probably a lot of them. But out of all the brew pubs in South Carolina. We had to hit on that one. I had the name of it in my notes, and I'll never go back. But it was absolutely horrible.
It's I bet.
And that, to me, the fact that we now have homegrown Southern perverts reflects the power of and influence of the media and entertainment industries.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, we know what their agenda is and has been for a long time. You know, that's one thing that Southerners one time resisted much better than they do now. You know, today you've got everybody hooked up to the same wavelength, as it were, because of not so much television anymore, but because of social media and, well, you know, the internet, the new sort of public square, if you will, is all pushing this message. You know, we don't have a local culture anymore. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't spend any time in front of the TV hardly. I watched a few things here and there, but we had local culture. That's what we went out and did. We went out and experienced the things around us instead of, you know, sitting home and being kind of an observer of canned entertainment and canned culture that somebody else is, you know, forcing into our heads. You know, years ago, the league, we don't do this anymore because we kind of lost our venue for doing it, but we would have an annual hoedown up in the hills of Tennessee on a big farm up there that somebody would let us use. We'd have all kind of musical groups come in, and we'd have all kind of crafts and all that people would demonstrate, and women would, you know, bring all kinds of homemade food. It was just a great weekend, you know, and kids would come and, you know, enjoy grease pig chases and, you know, all kind of stuff like that. And it was just a lot of fun. And I remember doing stuff like that when I was a kid, and it's wholesome entertainment and fun. And, you know, I think if we had a lot of that, you wouldn't have so many perverts in the South, because that kind of local culture doesn't provide a grounding for that sort of perversity. It's very wholesome and healthy, and you got different generations cooperating with one another, enjoying each other's company. But we've isolated our people, Bill, and you know, men will sit around. And what they do when they get off from work is they probably come home and either watch sports ball or pornography.
Right.
And they isolate themselves from their community. And they're vulnerable and easy targets for the Jew media.
People, that there have been studies on this, and I believe them because I've also observed it in my own life of some of my own friends or acquaintances or coworkers, and I'm talking about the 1980s. I'm not talking about now, right? That people that watch pornography are much more accepting of sodomy and race mixing, fornication, and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
It's a slippery slope. Sin is always a slippery slope, and you're not going to be able to control it. Eventually, you're going to end up in the pit because you decided to accept some of that slippery slope. It's a continual downhill slide from there.
Yeah, one sin begets another and another.
Well, I don't know exactly how, of course, none of us know exactly how Dobbs versus Jackson is ultimately going to turn out, but the left, it's funny to see the panic that they've been in and some of the absurd things that they say in response to this leak.
Well, can you imagine if the situation were reversed? Let's say in a case dealing with the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms, and a lot of so-called conservative groups started making the kind of bold threats about what was going to happen if the Second Amendment was overturned. Don't you think that the FBI would already be out here with indictments and arrests?
Absolutely. There would be raids all over the country. There'd be all kinds of indictments. Absolutely. I agree. And they would all be for criminal conspiracy, which is impossible to prove. It's impossible to prove that a thought did not occur in your head. How do you prove that?
That's right.
And any
there are various pro-abortion groups out there that are already making all kinds of threats, encouraging people to riot and to, you know, destroy property and probably threaten lives as well. You know, obviously I've been against abortion on principle all my life. And yeah, what I was going to say is obviously I want Roe versus Wade to be overturned, but I also want it to be overturned because I want to see how the left reacts to this, because I think it's going to be very instructive on down the line, because there are going to be some things in the future, the November elections being one of them, that's going to cause the left to react very violently as well. So I think we're going to get a little preview of how they're going to behave when things go against them, and how the feds are going to behave in allowing Antifa and Black Lives Matter and God knows what other groups out there, whether the feds are going to allow them to run rampant in the streets and destroy property and lives, or whether they're going to do something to crack down on them, or what the right's reaction will be to all this. It's going to be very instructive, I believe.
Absolutely. And even Trump, he really did give Black Lives Matter far too much latitude. If Donald Trump was the right-wing extremist that they label him as, that then he would have crushed all those Black Lives Matter riots last year, the year before. Biden, as soon as Joe Biden gets in, the left dies down because they're placated. As soon as a Republican gets in, and the left thinks that they're going to lose any of the ground that they've gained in this sodomite agenda, that then, and it's really a communist agenda, that then they riot, or they find reasons to riot. So I don't know if they're going to riot when Biden comes in, but with Biden as sitting president, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's why it's going to be interesting. I do think that there will be some visceral physical reaction that the left takes. They'll get out in the streets, and some of the crazy ones will do some crazy stuff, and it could catch on. But I think that you're right. I think, you know, if Trump were in office and Roe versus Wade were overturned,
we'd
I think
already
it
be
would
seen
be
riots.
Major riots.
I think we would have already seen them, which just with the
I do too. Yeah.
So
with just the threat of it,
and the entire media and most of the big tech are clearly on the side of the leftists. Even Fox News. Now, Fox News is generally, but mistakenly, viewed as having a conservative editorial bias. And even Fox News recently promoted this Pride Month, this celebration of sodomy, in June this month.
Fox News is just like all the rest of them. The thing that gives Fox its aura of conservatism is that for example, Tucker Carlson, who a lot of people think is a conservative, and you know, I guess he spouts off some conservative rhetoric, but he's certainly not one of us in the sense that he doesn't take the interest of white people to heart. He'll say that white people just want to be treated like everybody else in the country that their own ancestors founded and gave to them.
Right.
I mean, that's a weak position, you know.
Yes.
But he is sort of Mr. Conservative on there, and that's kind of, I think, giving people the erroneous idea that Fox News is a conservative venue, and it certainly isn't. It's not a whole lot different from any of the others.
We all know that white Christians are being demonized by society. We all know that. That white Christians who realize that there is something unique about our race and our civilization, which is worth preserving, and who dare to make that profession are publicly flogged and excommunicated from the general society. That's what sets us apart from Tucker Carlson. He would never do that. But this situation has persisted for at least 40 years, 50 years. Most of us probably know of the groups who are behind that entire agenda, but many of us don't know the reason, the true reason why we fail, why we suffer in this manner, and why conservatism has failed us. And nobody is a conservative. I mean, nobody is a conservative who claims the label as of a conservative because they've never conserved a damn thing.
No, it's just like Reverend Robert Louis Dabney, the great old Presbyterian minister who was Stonewall Jackson's aide-de-camp, wrote after the war. He said, and he was talking here about Northern conservatism, which was in the ascendancy at the time. You know, he said Northern conservatism has never conserved anything. All it does is follow, is the shadow of liberalism and follows along behind it and eventually comes to accept and validate everything that it opposed in liberalism, say, a generation prior. And that's what happens. Conservatives always end up adopting the liberal agenda just a little bit later than liberals. So if that's what conservatism is, it's useless. I mean, it's a toothless lapdog. And that's what conservatism has been in America for the last 50 years.
Absolutely. The so-called, for the last 100 and something years. It's even though the so-called conservatives of any party, whether they were Democrats, because at one time there were a majority of Southern Democrats were conservative at one time.
Oh, yeah.
The so-called conservatives of any party have slowly and incrementally accepted the communist agenda to destroy Christian society. It was going on the last 50 years. It was going on during the Roosevelt administration. It was going on during the Wilson administration. It was going on during the Theodore Roosevelt administration and all the presidents in between. Political conservative has never conserved anything. Anyone who says that they're a conservative is really a political LARPer. They're LARPing.
Yeah, they certainly are. Yeah, you're right. It's more likely 150 years than 50. And Dabney said all those long years ago. He said, you know, the South is going to be picking itself up and dusting itself off and worrying about mere survival, probably for a few generations, and that the future of the North American continent is now in the hands of the victors of this war. And what you do with your victory is going to determine the future of America. And boy, did they screw it up.
Absolutely. And we don't know how much, most people are not cognizant of how much the political spectrum, how much the center of it has shifted left significantly over the last 150 years.
Yes, absolutely.
Before the 19th century. Before the 19th century, most Christian men would never have accepted women's suffrage or so-called women's liberation. And this is a good measure of the shifting of the political spectrum. The proposed Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution, which is purported to remove all differences between the sexes in law, was so controversial when it was introduced in 1923. Now, somebody our age would remember the roar over the Equal Rights Amendment in the 1970s.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
The Nixon administration, right? It was a big thing. Yep. But that amendment was proposed. It was first introduced in 1923, and it was so controversial at that time that it was never passed until 1972.
That's right. It took 50 years.
And it has still not been properly ratified by the states to this day.
That's right.
There's still legal arguments over its ratification. It's still not considered ratified.
Right. Yeah, that's but just the fact that during that 50-year period from 1923 to 72, that things changed enough for it to be brought back up as a serious matter tells you that that window was shifting left, ever leftward during
yes,
that
sir.
time. And, you know, that happens. And it makes you wonder why everything has to shift leftward like that. It's not a natural process.
No, sir.
It is a process that has been pushed by a certain group for a certain reason. And we know who the group is, and they not only just them, but they've had a lot of hangers-on who hope to, I think, benefit by it, and largely non-whites. But whites in supporting this kind of stuff are, you know, they're tying the noose of their own, they're tying the knots in their own noose to be hanged with. It's suicidal for whites to do this. And talking about women's suffrage, that's been here for what, 100 years now? Can you imagine anything worse, maybe except giving the vote to Negroes, giving the vote to women?
Absolutely. It's horrible.
And it gives women
a voice in society, which the in their traditional roles, the husband is supposed to have that voice, and only the husband should have that voice. So
that's right. The husband is supposed to go out into the world and to deal with society on behalf of the family.
But
the woman's
now,
role is internal.
But now half the wives in America negate their husband's voice every election.
Yeah, exactly. And that just basically sets them at odds with one another. There can be no familial peace with that situation.
None whatsoever. And there isn't. And the divorce rates demonstrate that.
That's exactly right.
So because this window is ever shifting leftward, this window looking at the center, right? More and more mainstream denominational Christians, people who can be considered typical Christians, are publicly scorned and slandered as being far right, and even as Nazis by leftists in the media. So the gulf between average Christians, or even merely average citizens, is widening daily. And while both Christianity and Scripture as a whole have traditionally protected the unborn child, countless Jews have publicly declared that overturning Roe v. Wade would violate their religious freedoms, something which is absolutely contrary to Scripture. So the wicked...
Well, doesn't that tell you a lot?
Absolutely. And the wicked, as St. Paul tells us, as Paul of Tarsus tells us, the wicked often disguise themselves as angels of light, but they are really only agents of darkness. And they're
That's
telling
right.
on themselves. That they're, when they say something like that, they're blatantly exposing themselves. And they feel they're not going to suffer consequences for it. They're bold.
Well, they're bold because they haven't seen any pushback. And that means that we haven't done our job.
We haven't done our job, and that's why we're suffering tyranny. Because never being able to maintain the moral high ground, which they so audaciously claim to inhabit, wherever the wicked are dominant, in the end, the result is always the imposition of tyranny, which is why we see these tyrannical government laws that force us to accept sodomy, or these court decisions that negate state laws that are against abortion or sodomy. That's tyranny. And that's why we suffer it, because we haven't stood against sin, and we have tolerated these evils.
Yeah, it's Yahweh's punishment. You know, he's very clear about that. If you don't follow me, then I'll give you somebody else over you who will do, and a long list of things that you can expect to have done to you if you will not follow him and his law. And we haven't. We've been too cowardly to do that, to stand up to these people and call them what they are, and to deal with them as they should be dealt with.
I have an example. There's this gentleman in Pennsylvania. His name is Doug Mastriano. He's a retired Army colonel, and he's a Pennsylvania state senator from Southeast Pennsylvania. And He is being overtly labeled as a far-right politician by Wikipedia and Google. And Google features that statement when you search his name on Google, that he's a far-right politician. Scratching the surface, because I visited this guy's website, it's apparent that Mastriano is smeared with the far-right label only because he seeks to keep male sodomites out of women's sports in Pennsylvania. So he's far-right for that, because he supports Donald Trump, and because he is recognized and campaigned against the blatant election corruption in the state. So it seems to me that for those reasons alone, because I didn't see anything else on in his policies or in his philosophy that by which he could be labeled as far right. I mean, he doesn't want to go out and put Jews into ovens. He doesn't want to send Negroes back to Africa. He's not a racist by any means, but he's labeled far right because he doesn't want men playing in women's sports, basically.
that's what happens when you allow the other side to dictate the terminology and the definitions of the terms that get used.
That's what they've been doing because they've controlled the media for 150 years.
Yeah, the narrative is what they've come to control here.
Well, if we aren't able to identify the problems of the narrative and to have the courage to resist the tolerance of sin and not tolerate sin, then we may as well just shrivel up and die.
Well, that's what is going to happen to us if we take that course, because I think Yahweh will allow that to happen. As you pointed out earlier, he will keep a remnant. But that remnant will have some very, very hard times to go through. And I personally don't want to see that for the rest of my life or yours, or certainly for our children and our grandchildren, to have to live through such terrible times. But they will certainly be deserved, of us anyway, if we don't do what we know we're supposed to do. And, you know, God has given certain people eyes to see and ears to hear. And I think that would include you and me in that category. But that puts an extra burden on us, because we know what the problem is. We know who the enemy is. So we have an obligation to use every ounce of energy that we have in our bodies to fight these people to the very end. And if we don't do that, what excuse do we have, you know? We who have been given eyes to see and ears to hear and put on the front lines of this fight, if we won't fight, how should we expect any of our compatriots out there who maybe are not as quick to wake up to this to us, as wake up to this as we have been? How are we to expect to curry Yahweh's favor if we don't fight this tooth, fang, and claw all the way to the end and set a good example for all of our compatriots out there? So we have an extra burden on our shoulders just because we know these things, Bill. I mean, you know, ignorance is bliss sometimes, and we have a lot of ignorant people out there. But for those of us who know what's going on here, including your audience out there, we have a special obligation, and it's not going to be an easy task, and it may be a costly one for us. It may cost us our lives in the long run. But, hey, I don't know about you, but Well, I think I do know about you too. We've lived good long lives. I'd like to live a little while longer if I could, but you know, we have a duty before us, and we just have to make sure that we do it to the best of our capabilities and use what Yahweh has given us as best we can to fight this evil and to destroy it.
Well, sir, I pray you live a lot longer too, but where you said ignorance is bliss, the other side of that coin is the fact that with much wisdom comes much sorrow, which we find in Solomon's words in Ecclesiastes. And that's
right.
Exactly why he expressed them, because the vanity of men and the seeming vanity of the efforts of man are, in the end, worth the trouble. As Solomon also explained in Ecclesiastes, at the very end, because all our works will be judged by God, and that's why. So facing these difficulties, tolerating, refusing to tolerate evil, let me put it that way, and standing in opposition to evil, as Christians are expected to do, resist the devil and he will flee from you. We are
right.
expected, as Paul also often explained in his epistles, we are expected to oppose evil. So we must know that in the end, there is a reward for that difficulty that we might face in this life. But there's no reward for tolerating evil or for standing around. And where you say fighting against this evil, that takes a lot more than sitting on Facebook and posting memes. That is not fighting for your people. I mean, that...
No.
It might be worthy to share important information. And if we're posting memes, they should contain something worth sharing. But that's not fighting in itself. That's merely just circle jerking and preaching to the choir.
Yes, it is. And that's why we had the theme of our recent League of the South conference down in Lake City as a real life activism for nationalists. Because we're not going to win this fight by simply sitting behind in front of a computer screen. That, as you point out, that's useful for disseminating information, but the real fight's going to be won out in real life, as we say, and that's where the danger is, and that's why a lot of people don't want to get out there. You know, I wouldn't dare because I grew up in a different era. You know, I get a lot of people writing me stuff online and everything because they don't like who I am and calling me all kind of names and everything, and I say, well, you know, it's easy to sit there anonymously somewhere and call me all kind of names. And I said, I'm not going to do that back to you because I was taught not to say anything to anybody that you wouldn't say to them to their face. So if you want to talk to me in those terms, come see me. I'll give you my address. And you can come and say that to me face to face. Well, I don't have any takers on that.
No.
But, you know, that it's so easy to be a big shot when you're sitting here with your keyboard and your computer screen. And it's so easy to think that you're fighting that way. And as I said, and you said, you can disseminate some good information, but that's not where the battle's going to be won. It's going to be won out there in the trenches, the real-life trenches where you get dirty and bloody and sweaty and where you experience some pain and preferably inflicted on your enemies. So that's what we have to look forward to.
Well, absolutely. But as you said earlier in this discussion, we have to prove our worth, that we're worthy of victory. And Yahweh will give us the victory. Our God will give us the victory if
yes,
we prove
right.
our worth.
You know, I can't remember the name of this poem or even the author, but it stuck with me. I read it years ago, and I can't quote it exactly, but... It says something like, I didn't ask you to win. All I asked you to do was fight, which kind of sums up the idea that, you know, man proposes and God disposes. And like our great Confederate heroes like Jackson and Lee and some others said, you know, we do our duty and leave the consequences to God. And I think that's true, Bill. I think we know what our duty is. We've already been given our orders, as it were. And we know the battle before us, and we can either shrink from it or we can march straight into it bravely and take the consequences. And I'm convinced, just what you said, if we fight, God will give us a victory.
Absolutely. We have that assurance. It's expressed quite often in Scripture. But mostly as examples. I mean, there are places where it's expressed explicitly. And we find it in Isaiah chapter 25, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, in Revelation chapter 15, where if we keep the commandments of Christ, and we don't worship the beast, and I could explain worship of the beast, but it's not really our purpose here, but if we don't worship the beast and we keep the commandments of Christ, then we do have the victory because we are overcoming this world, and that's what we
yes.
have to do.
That's right. Absolutely. So, you know, it's a pretty simple proposition there. It's not an easy one to carry out, but it's a very simple thing. But it takes courage, and what we need to be doing is to try and pump up our compatriots, our fellow men out there, who should be on our sides with the courage they need, to join us in this battle, because we need more. We need more of them to become active. And there's fulfillment, real fulfillment in your life when you get involved in a cause in which the stakes are so high and in which the danger is so prevalent. Because it brings home to you that this is real life. This is not a game, you know. And that's what so many people, I think, fail to see in this modern world. You know, it's so full of games, whether they're video games or sports games or Yahweh only knows what. But to get out there and roll your sleeves up and get immersed in all of the things that make up real life, particularly the struggle, I think that's what makes life worth living.
Well, absolutely. If you don't stand on your principles, if you don't stand up for your own heritage, then how could life ever be worth living?
It can. It's just you know, in that case, it's pure materialism. How much fun can I have? How many things can I accumulate? And what, you know, what's my final score when I die? You know, and what an empty life. You know, I'm always going back to what my father said about being able to stand in front of the mirror and look at yourself and ask yourself if you've done what you should. And if you can look at yourself in the mirror every morning and say, "Yes, I've done my duty for the day," or "I'm going to do my duty for the day," and then do it, and then get up the next day and do it again, put one foot in front of the other day after day, then it may be a tedious, tiring slog, but the end goal, the end result, is going to be something that will be worth it. Win or lose, temporally speaking. We've had a lot of good men who have died over the centuries in this fight, and we'll have good men who die in the coming years as well. But that is not the ultimate, that is not the ultimate test of whether something is right or wrong. It's whether or not you survive it. I just want to, when I stand in front of Yahweh, I want to hear those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And, you know, whether or not at that point we have the victory, I don't know, but I do know this. One of these days, sir, there will be a victory celebration here or somewhere else, and I certainly want to be there, and I want all my friends to be there too.
Absolutely, I totally concur, sir. There's an example at hand in my presentation last week. I spoke about Jacob and Esau, and Rebecca had witnessed that her elder son was a race mixer, and she did everything that she could, and more or less risked her own well-being so that her son, the race mixer, did not receive the family inheritance, that the son who was obedient received it. And she's justified in that because we know her name today. If the other son had inherited the blessings and the inheritance, we would not know her name today. We wouldn't even know anything about that those forefathers of our race or our who are our ancestors, in fact. So we have her name with us today, which justifies her. That alone justifies her. So in
Sure.
or in that alone, we know that she's been justified. Let me put it that way. These Christian churches, these modern Christian churches, are all playing the part of that older son and race mixing, giving their inheritances or giving our inheritances to these aliens who have never been worthy of that inheritance.
That's
And
right.
they prove that they're not worthy of the inheritance by their own actions, time and time again, and their own
Exactly.
behavior. It really troubles me to see people that understand some of the things that we understand, or the need for succession, or the need for morality in society. It really troubles me to see them attend these denominational Christian churches who are selling that heritage down the river. That they're trampling all over it. It's amazing to me that even some League of the South members are still attached to these denominational churches. And I really don't think that they understand that all of these denominational churches have been nothing but agents for government from the days of the Council of Nicaea. That's when it began. Government supported churches began with Constantine the Great.
That's right. You know, I think one reason for that is obviously people don't know their history and they don't know their theology. They don't understand proper interpretation of the Bible. But I think another part of it is tradition. You know, they still go to the churches that their fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers went to, and they think they're doing a good thing because of that. But they haven't been discerning enough to realize the changes, and I don't mean just subtle changes. I mean a lot of in-your-face changes that have gone on in these denominational churches over the last 100 years, 150 years or so. And if they stopped to really think, what am I supporting by my attendance and my tithe? Do I really believe this? Then the answer would probably be no, I need to find me another place and means of worship.
Absolutely. I wish people would turn to home Bible groups and home Bible studies.
Well, that's what we've done.
These churches, 100 years ago, they would not have accepted feminism. 50 years ago, they would not have accepted race mixing. 30 years ago, they would not have accepted sodomy. And today they accept all those things. And don't people see the slippery slope?
And what's next?
Well, what's next is pedophilia. It's already here. It's coming.
Yes, that's already here.
And after that, it's bestiality.
I mean, we are moving way, way, way down the slippery slope to hell now.
Absolutely. I saw this pattern 15, 20 years ago, that pedophilia would be next. I've written about it. Pedophilia would be next after gay marriage. And here it is. It does please me that now even secular white nationalists and denominational Judeo-Christians do understand that these sodomites and these tranny festivals and these pride marches are really all about grooming children, normalizing this perverted behavior in the eyes of children so that they can enlist children into their sodomy.
That's right. I mean, why else would you have a drag queen story hour at the local library for children other than that?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no other purpose for it.
No other whatsoever. It's grooming. And I'm glad people are recognizing that it's grooming. And that's a rather recent development, I believe, that many people have come to that recognition.
Yeah, I think so. And I just pray that people will get a little courage, not just to oppose these in word, but to oppose them in deed and to show up at their local library when these things happen and say, no, you know, this is not going to be done at a local place that my tax dollars support.
Absolutely.
I have an interest in here.
But that's another element of this problem you have just exposed, is the tax dollars supporting the sodomy. That's too many Christians today, denominational Christians, Roman Catholics, believe that Romans chapter 13, which has a couple of mistranslations in it, in the King James Version, they believe Romans chapter 13 tells them that they have to be obedient to the government. So
that's a mistake.
When the government legislates sodomite marriage, they believe that they have to accept sodomites as being married. And that's just one example.
Yeah, I know.
In Romans chapter 13, I'm not going to get too deep into the theology here, but in Romans chapter 13, Paul is only expressing something which is an inevitable element in our society, an element which can't be avoided, is that every soul must be subject to more powerful authorities. And that all authority is ultimately from God.
Right.
So one opposing an authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who are in opposition will themselves receive judgment. And that is true. But then he says, rulers are not a terror to good work, but to evil.
Evil, exactly.
So now do you desire to not be fearful of the authority? You only fear the authority that's in the power is in the hands of God. You should only fear it if you're doing something evil.
Exactly.
But the essence of these words, practice good and you will have approval from it, a servant of God, if you seek to serve God, is to you for good. Well, that authority is serving God. Whether the authority is good or evil, it's serving God. And if you do good, Paul's telling you that you won't suffer from the evil of the authority. So, I mean, yes, we're all going to be tried, and that there are other factors in place here. We're all going to suffer trials, and Paul, as well as the other apostles and Christ himself, all warn against that. But if you practice evil, be fearful, for not without purpose will he, meaning the authority, bear the sword. And that's where the King James has a poor translation, because the King James Version is also tailored to suit the will of the English king who commissioned it.
Yes, exactly.
And all of these church translations have suited their various governments from the beginning of the Council of Nicaea. That's besides the point. Paul is not telling Christians that they must obey a wicked government.
No.
To Paul, good is obedience to God and not to government. Christ himself agrees with Paul, where some of his followers had complained that Pontius Pilate unjustly killed some of the Galileans. And as it is recorded in Luke chapter 13, he said in response, suppose ye that these Galileans were sinners above all the Galileans because they suffered such things? I tell you, nay, but except ye repent, ye shall all perish likewise. So if we're not tolerating evil, if we're seeking to do good, we have an assurance that we are not going to suffer at the hands of this government. If you look at the messages of the seven churches in the Revelation, there's two churches which are not criticized. And the first is Smyrna. And Smyrna means ointment. And I believe that the church at Smyrna wasn't criticized because they abode by the anointing, which is from Christ, and acted as Christians. But they said that they would be tried by Satan. And Satan is, of course, a reference to the enemies of God. So they would be tried because even though they weren't criticized, in some manner they were falling short. And to understand that, we have to understand that the other church, which was not criticized and which would not be tried, was Philadelphia. And Philadelphia means brotherly love. So you have to abide, in my opinion, you have to abide by the anointing of God and have love for your brother, who is defined in Scripture as being one of the children of your own people. And you won't, yet you have an assurance that you won't be tried by the devil, that God will see you through it. And that's what I believe, that's my opinion, but Paul is not telling us to obey an evil government. He's telling us that if we don't obey God, that the government will be used to punish us.
Yes, absolutely. Stop me if I've told you this before, because I don't want to bore any of your listeners out there with a story told twice. But back about 20 years ago, when Judge Roy Moore was making a stand for the Ten Commandments in the Alabama judicial building here down here in Montgomery, we went down to protest the removal of the Ten Commandments monument. And I, subsequent to that, I was on the radio. A lot of Christian stations around Alabama and other southern states about this issue, because it was in the news. It was a pretty big news item at the time. And so many Christians on there, Bill, would call in and say, well, I'm a supporter of the Ten Commandments, of course, but a federal judge, I think it was Judge Myron Thompson, federal judge in Alabama, has made the decision that the Ten Commandments has got to go, and that's a law, and we got to follow the law because we're told in the Bible that that's what we've got to do. And I said, well, let me give you another example. What's going to happen when the next time Judge Thompson rules on a matter? It's going to shut the doors of your church and make it where you can't go worship on Sunday morning. Are you going to just say, well, I don't like his ruling, but it's the law and I got to abide by it? You know what the answer to that was, almost to a man? And I confronted a lot of Christian callers with that question, which has happened, by the way, with the COVID thing. They said, well, that'll never happen here in America.
Yeah, oh, right. Okay. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it has happened. But, you know, these people want to dodge the issue. The issue is everything a government decrees, just because it is ipso facto a government, lawful and godly? No, absolutely not. As you pointed out in reading Romans chapter 13, if it's evil, it don't count. And anything that goes in the face of God's commandments, like the removal of them from a public building, you can't justify supporting a law that does that. You have got, if you're a true Christian, you have to say, no, I can't accept that. I will not accept that.
Absolutely.
I will not accept that, nor will I accept any law that closes the door of my place of worship, which today, if they closed them all down, it'd probably be a damn good thing, but you get my point. But these people said, no, that'll never happen here. See, that's their excuse. This is America. It can't happen here. Well, welcome to the real world.
Absolutely. I fully agree. And that's one good way to test their hypocrisy. But that gentleman was taught that he must obey the government from Romans chapter 13, and that's not what Paul is saying in Romans chapter 13. What he's saying is that if we do good, we'll be rewarded for it, and the tyrannical government won't bring harm to us. Tyrannical government, Paul is saying, is a punishment from God for sin.
Exactly. Exactly.
Paul began
Which
that
means
epistle.
That you give in to evil and you don't support the good.
Right. Paul began that epistle to the Romans by describing to them the sins from which their nation was suffering. And they had homosexuality, lesbian, they had the open sodomy in Rome. And that's what Paul's describing in Romans chapter 1. And the historian Tacitus of the first century, 30 years after Paul, had also complained about that same thing, that basically, sexual license was being called modern. And yes. How old is that story? And that's what they tell
story.
You today. That's what they tell you today. Say, get with the times. You're not up
that's
to date.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I remember the 1960s, the sexual revolution of the 60s. That's exactly what they were saying.
Right. Well, Tacitus was complaining about that slogan, if you will, in the first century. So it's not new.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Perversion is not modern by any means.
No.
Sodom was in Genesis.
Way back at the very beginning.
Yeah, so. Sodom was 4,000 years ago.
That's right. Yeah, none of this is new. I mean, it's just repackaged and rehashed.
Well, the Romans had the same idolatry, sodomy, lesbianism, which are also a plague upon us today.
Yep.
But men, they suffer not because they themselves are grievous sinners. Men suffer when they fail to take a stand against sin, when they tolerate evil. At one time in our history, not too long ago, committing sins such as adultery, fornication, or sodomy would get a man killed, or at least punished severely and put out of his community permanently. And now, after 100 or so years of being programmed with television and movies, the entertainments of the devil, tolerating such evils has become the norm. And over that same time, this is not a mistake, our government has become increasingly oppressive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we were promised, isn't it?
Absolutely. I did a brief survey yesterday preparing for this. I just looked at the laws passed by three Congresses, right? And the Congress of 1899 to 1901, the Acts of Congress entered into law, Volume 31 of the Laws of Congress at the Federal Register, contained 2,208 pages, 1901. That's 2 years. 1899 to 1901. In 1950 and 51, volume 64 of the congressional laws, they totaled 3,187 pages.
Right.
In 2013 and 2014, they totaled nearly 6,000 pages.
Wow.
Volumes 127 and 128 of the federal law. That doesn't even include the IRS code and things like that. That's just the laws passed by Congress and the total number of pages that wow. It takes to produce them in the Federal Register. So 6,000 pages, that's triple the laws of 1900. And it gets worse every year.
Yeah, and absolutely. That's amazing.
What that means is that the government is more controlling of your life every year. It grows and grows and grows.
Yeah.
It never stops.
Well, that's the central hallmark of tyranny, is the control mechanism there. I'm not really surprised to hear that. I'm not really surprised to hear that people tolerate it either.
Well, 50 years ago, the government, state governments were punishing sodomites. And today, they're protecting them, even as they groom our children at these public libraries and these pride marches in the park and these other events which they have. They have private events all the time at various bars and restaurants, and people still attend those businesses. And it's incredible that Christians would attend a business that supports sodomy, because the left is much more proactive about that than we are.
Well, and not only does the government protect the sodomites, it punishes the people who stand against them.
Right.
If you're a Christian, if you are a true Christian, and you support a business that you know is pro-sodomite, how can you defend yourself?
Absolutely. And that's absolutely, you can't defend yourself. In the Revelation, in chapter 11 of the Revelation, we see that the people who would kill the two witnesses would then rejoice over their dead bodies. Those two witnesses are testifying to the gospel of Christ and the commandments of God. That's right. What they're testifying of. That's their testimony. And those who would kill them, who are also likened to Sodom and Egypt, and it is they who bear the mark of the beast. And the mark of the beast is not a physical mark. The mark of the beast has to do with how you live your life. And
right.
I could prove that from scripture, but that's immaterial. They bear the mark of the beast. They are likened to Sodom and to Egypt in Revelation chapter 11. And they rejoice over the dead bodies of the witnesses of Christ because they worship the beast. And this is the same position which we find in America today.
Yes,
the leftists rejoice.
Anyone who stands up against this monstrous government and the entire perverted society will be killed, and there will be dancing on their graves.
Right. This was the League of the South in Charlottesville, and that's what they were doing. They were rejoicing that they destroyed our gathering.
That's right. Absolutely. That's what we should expect, and that should tell you all you need to know about your enemy, how unrighteous he is, whom he serves.
They rejoice every time they triumph over morality. They rejoice every time one of their perversions is successfully forced on the general society, either by court decisions, by legislation. They rejoice.
And when one is threatened to be taken away, they react like they're going to react in this Roe versus Wade overturning that we may be seeing coming
Absolutely.
Up here. So it's going to be very instructive.
Well, I pray we do see it.
And I pray we do too. Do you know when the Supreme Court is going to rule on this?
I heard it was in June that the ruling was originally scheduled to be published.
Right. I heard that it was at the very end of this session, and I heard that was probably within a couple of weeks, i.e. by the end of this month. So I'm thinking that it might be, maybe a week or two away, maybe.
Now, the only problem is that justices can plausibly change their vote up until the time the ruling is published. It's possible that it's not going to be the quote-unquote law of the land, right? But it's very possible it is. And hopefully those five justices will stand on their original vote rather than change it for fear of the Jews.
Yeah, I will. This is one of those I'll believe it when I see it things,
right?
Because I've seen too many victories snatched on the jaws of, or whatever you put it. I've seen too many what I thought would be victories go down
right.
as defeats.
Too many
and
defeats.
That's because people lost their nerve at the last minute.
Absolutely. It's happened all the time. There's no courage backing principles in our society any longer. It's very rare.
You know, I think I'll make a prediction. I think that woman, Amy Coney Barrett or whatever her name is, I think she'll be the weak link. I think she'll be the one to give in.
Well, I pray not, because I think it would be a lot better for us and our purposes if this actually succeeds. And this is the majority decision. Because it'll drive a much wider stake into the heart of the center that the center can't hold up, because more and more are mainstream average everyday Christians being demonized for their basic Christian morality.
Yeah, that's a good thing too. It's going to have to happen that way. They're going to have to be told by the left, you are bad people, very bad people. And these people are going to say, look, no, I'm really not a bad person. You know, I've lived my life according to some good biblical standards here, and there's no way that you can call me a bad person. Well, they're being called bad people right now. And I think that's a really good thing, because the left always overplays its hand. And I think they're in the process of overplaying it right now, because the last thing they want to do is push all these normies, as they call them, into the awake zone. And I think they're doing that.
Well, that's true. And for decades and decades, they've demonized Nazis, right? People like us.
We're the low-hanging fruit, Bill.
Yes.
We're easy to demonize.
But this whole critical race theory which is all based on Jewish critical theory from the Frankfurt School.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely
developed
it's
in the Frankfurt School.
It's just the latest version of that.
And Jewish critical theory was organized and developed for the purpose of communist revolution in the West. That's why it was originally created. That's why it was originally theorized, I should say.
That's right. It was the intellectual battering ram that was to break down the doors.
Absolutely. And critical race theory is the latest product of it. And that is actually giving the leftists a structure by which to demonize the most innocent of whites in America and Europe.
That's right. And that's going to be a mistake.
I pray that forces more whites to wake up and to see the validity of our position, because we have the only valid position.
Oh, ours is the only valid position. And that's why they hate us so much. You know, our numbers are small, but our truth is big, and our God is big. And that's why the left realizes that they can't leave us alone. Even though, if you look at the odds between them and us in worldly temporal terms, it should be no contest. You know, it should be the David and Goliath thing writ large. But they can't tolerate us because they realize that we're right, and that if our ideas start spreading to normal people, they've got problems.
Well, sir, it's always been my endeavor is to spread these ideas to normies.
And it's, mine too, sir. Mine too.
Google is just, most people are relying on Google as a search engine, and Google is just totally, completely suppressing our message.
Yeah, it really is. That's why we need to find a new way of getting the message out. And you know, there are some interesting things. I'm not a techie like you are. You know a lot more about tech stuff than I do. But I understand there's some stuff out there on the not the drawing board, but some Linux things and some other alternatives to Google and things like that that may be becoming more prominent, I guess you might say, and available to people. And I hope that's true.
I hope it's true, too. It's difficult to get normies off of Google. It really is.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. But who knows? I mean, you know, if we keep pushing the message. You know, I thought when we were banned from YouTube, I thought, well, you know, there'll be no other venue for the types of videos and all that we want to see, but there have been other competitors have sprung up, you know, like Rumble and some others. So, you know, I think we just have to keep fighting and not let them suppress us without us, you know, popping up over here and then popping up again over there. And I think that drives them crazy too, that we won't give up and that we won't succumb and give in to the fear of fighting them, and I think that's what they've always wanted, is to cow us and put us in the corner and make us cringe in fear, you know, from them. They don't like it when people stand up to them, and they don't like it when people are able to find ways to adapt and get around their system. And we got some smart people in our corner, and Yahweh's will, we'll have more, and I pray that every day.
So do I, sir. I really do. We have to grow the League of the South to something even bigger than it was before Charlottesville. That's my prayer.
Yeah, we've as I said in my speech at the League conference here a couple of weeks ago, we've been bloodied, battered, and bruised since Charlottesville. I mean, there's no getting around that. We took a real hit, but the thing is, we're still in the game. Still in the war. We're still fighting. And we'll with Yahweh's blessing, we'll regain our strength and our footing, and we'll be back stronger than ever. But we just have to persevere through the tough times. And, you know, it's very easy. You can tell the character of a man much better, as well as an organization, during the hard times rather than during the easy times. It's easy for everybody to be all positive and energetic and, you know, fired up, whatever you want to say. When times are good, the real acid test, I think, is how do you people hold up in hard times when you know, you're looking defeat in the eye and you've got to do everything you can just to survive for a while. That's when you are able to tell about a man's character and about an organization's character. And we've lost a lot of people. A lot of people have gone by the wayside. I hope some of those people will come back, but the ones that have stuck by us in the league are the ones that I consider to be the true heroes. And we still have a lot of room in the league for new members. If there are any of you out there who want to join us, I can promise you this. We may not win, but we'll fight like hell.
Well, sir, ultimately we will win. We just may not see it in our lifetimes.
Yeah,
somehow.
That's right. That's what I meant. Yes. I've got ultimate confidence, Bill. in the outcome of Yahweh's promise here. We're going to win. I would like to win in our lifetimes, because I'd like to see the victory celebration. And more importantly, I'd like to see the demise of all our enemies. I'd like to see it personally. I'd like to have a hand in it.
Yes, sir. That's one of the promises we find in Scripture. But we have to, as Paul of Tarsus said, bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. The only way we're going to do that is to forsake the media, forsake movies, forsake entertainment. It's all perversion. It's all corruption. All movies, there's no such thing as a good movie. All movies are created by the same handful of studios. None of them are good. We have to forsake all of the sports entertainment complex, which is nothing but race mixing and evil, and even they promote sodomy. We have to leave the world.
We have to leave the world behind.
Then we have a promise.
Alternative institutions that are pleasing to Yahweh.
Absolutely. And then we have a promise that we would then be in readiness to revenge all disobedience when our obedience is fulfilled.
Right. Absolutely. We need to remember that every day, and we need to be saying that to our people every day.
And we have to be building communities, which could mean League of the South chapters. We have to be
building
our own communities based on those principles.
That's right. We need to understand what ecclesia means.
Yes, sir. The true ecclesia.
That's right.
We did a podcast probably about 3 years ago, maybe, titled, What is a Church?
Yeah.
And the church is the ecclesia. It's the assembly of your people, like-minded people.
That's it.
It's not rituals and pomp and circumstance. It's an assembly.
It's not a brick and mortar building on a corner either.
Right. It's an assembly of people who gather in Christ and fellowship in his name. That's what a church is.
Absolutely. And you can do that at a barbecue.
Absolutely. And that's how we do our fellowships.
Absolutely, sir.
At barbecues, at members' homes.
I said that.
And we're much better off for that. And we don't have to accept the sins of the world, or we're not conditioned to believe in the other lies that these mainstream denominational churches are teaching.
You know, I think it's going to be so liberating and freeing to our people when they get away from these denominational churches and begin to realize what a primrose path they've been led, the path to destruction and hell. And I just pray that people's eyes will be opened to what's going on in the seminaries and all of these churches who's had, you know, you said earlier that they had to be ADL approved. That's absolutely true. You know, there's going to come a time, and I've seen this lately, when there are going to have to be warnings put in Bibles that are printed that the content herein is anti-Semitic. Are you sure you want to read this? You know, this is anti-Semitic stuff. I can see that day coming.
As early as, and I just read this for the first time this morning, and I went and found the entire article, and I found it on the website for the Barnes Review. And it's a reproduction of something that was put out. It was written by a gentleman named Joseph Camp, and it's called The Judeo-Christian Heritage Hoax. And it was put out in a publication called The American Mercury.
Oh, yeah. My father-in-law introduced me to that way back in the 1970s.
Yes. And The American Mercury was
H.L. Mencken's.
Yes, Mencken. I was trying to remember his last name.
Yeah.
H.L. Mencken was the founder of that publication, the famous
That's
author.
That's right.
And this Joseph Camp explained that as long ago as 1970, that the vacation Bible schools in the South, they're mostly in the South. Some of them are in the Midwest, maybe a few in the North, but they're mostly concentrated in the South. We're using booklets based on ADL books in 1970.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And I'm not really surprised either.
Now, because we have a lot of, obviously have a lot of churches up here in North Alabama. There's about a church on every block. And they all have Bible school in June.
I've seen them all over the South.
They put these big display banners out about what their subject is in this year's Bible school, and they all look like they come right out of the ADL talking points.
Absolutely.
I just shake my head in disgust when I go by.
So not only are these churches all government agents, and people may not believe that, but the churches have to sign agreements if they're going to function as nonprofit organizations under the IRS tax code.
That's right. Absolutely, they do.
Now, any gift to any pastor or any church does not, it's a gift, and the pastor or the church does not have to pay taxes on it because it's a gift.
Right.
But if the parishioners or the people that attend a church want to deduct those gifts from their income tax, then the church has to be IRS 501c3 certified.
Yep, that's right.
And to do that, that church has to sign agreements with the IRS that they won't preach against any government policies.
Exactly.
So if it's government policy to marry sodomites, a church is barred from preaching against sodomite marriage.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And that's every church in America. There are no exceptions. There are very few exceptions. In some rural areas, there's these little independent Baptist churches or other denominations have them also that are very small and out in the woods or out in rural communities that don't have that don't have that tax deductible IRS designation. So if you give money to one of those churches to support it, then you can't deduct it from your taxes. You pay the taxes. Now, that's the cost of religious freedom.
Wow. Yeah, somebody asked me back about 28 years ago when we were putting the league together, said, you're going to make it a 501c3, aren't you? I said, hell no, I'm not.
No.
Well, why not? I said, because I'm not dancing to their tune.
Right. And they don't understand that. Most people don't understand that the compromises, especially a church, but especially an organization like the League of the South also that has principles, they don't understand the compromises that you would have to make in order to do that.
That's right.
And you would probably have to delete a third of the language or half the language in your position papers.
Absolutely would.
So what would differ you from the John Birch Society?
Not much.
Not anything, right?
That's right.
And we see how the John Birch Society ended up.
Oh, that's correct.
It's horrible. Even though it was founded on not perfect, but on decent principles, it turned out horribly.
It did. It was founded on decent principles. I learned about it from my father-in-law again, and he was a member for a while. But he used to say to me, he said, they bring a lot of good stuff up about communism, but they won't ever talk about the damn Jews.
Right. Absolutely. The purveyors of communism.
That's right. That's it. So they wouldn't go all the way, as he said. So.
No, they wouldn't. Well, sir, it's been a pleasure. And it always is, and I pray that we could have you back again in a couple of months.
Sir, as long as the good Lord gives me health and strength and the ability to talk, I'll be on your program with you here, and it's always my pleasure to do it. And I appreciate your friendship and appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. It's to me, my friendship, I mean, we're on the same page. How could we not be friends? It's crazy.
Absolutely. It's good to have friends like you.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. That's humbling.
And I appreciate all the good theological stuff that you taught me too, and I got a lot left to learn. So.
Well, thank you. I will see you again soon. This program will air at 7 p.m. Central Time this evening. Chris DeGenia. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Praise Christ.
Okay. Praise Christ.